Have you ever wondered what happens when the veil between worlds thins and the extraordinary bleeds into the ordinary? Janine O'Reilly's How Does It Feel?, the first installment in her best-selling Infatuated Fae series, has captivated readers worldwide with its intoxicating blend of dark fantasy, forbidden romance, and psychological depth. Since its release, the book has climbed to number one on multiple bestseller lists, with celebrities like Taylor Swift and Florence Welch citing it as a favorite escape. The series has sparked a TikTok phenomenon with millions of videos under hashtag InfatuatedFae, where fans debate the complex morality of its characters. What makes this tale so compelling is how it transforms familiar fairy tale elements into something dangerously seductive, asking us, what happens when the monster becomes your salvation? Callie Peterson lives a quiet, isolated existence as an environmental scientist in the small town of Willow Springs. At 29, she's devoted her life to conservation work at the local Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, where her passion for Luna moths and innovative anti-parasite treatments using mushrooms consumes her days. The locals view her with suspicion for enforcing hunting regulations, leaving her with few friends besides Cliff, the game warden who harbors unrequited feelings for her, and Cecilia, her supportive colleague. What makes Callie's scientific pursuits so poignant is that they're rooted in childhood trauma. After losing her mother and sister in a car accident, she was left with only a mysterious V-shaped scar on her palm and vivid memories of encountering what she believed was a fairy with butterfly wings beneath a mushroom. Though her family dismissed the experience as hallucinations from poisonous mushrooms, the encounter sparked her lifelong fascination with winged creatures. Her dedication to science recently led to disappointment when the Lepidoptera Migratory Society rejected her application to track monarch butterflies in Mexico, suggesting she might abandon the project to start a family. This setback only strengthens her resolve to focus on her local conservation work, particularly saving Luna moths through her experimental treatments. Callie's routine life takes an unexpected turn when she encounters a beautiful red fox with extraordinary golden eyes and sparkling fur on her property. There's something eerily familiar about the creature that draws her in, despite Cliff's immediate suspicion that it's rabid. This encounter leads her to befriend Earl, an elderly gas station attendant whom locals call Crazy Earl. To her surprise, Earl reveals himself to be a fellow biologist with an interest in mushrooms, creating an unexpected bond between them. As they develop a friendship foraging for mushrooms in the forest, Earl's warnings about certain specimens, particularly the destroying angel mushrooms, grow increasingly ominous. When they discover a perfect ring of these mushrooms, Earl becomes visibly distressed, mentioning they form fairy rings that some believe are portals to other worlds. Despite his warnings to stay away from them, Callie's scientific curiosity remains undeterred. Little does she know that this curiosity will soon lead her down a path from which there may be no return. One evening, while preparing for a dinner with Earl, Callie realizes she left her expensive microscope, a prized Leica worth 3 months of her research stipend, in the forest. Dressed in high heels and a tiny black dress meant for a very different kind of evening, she ventures into the darkening woods to retrieve it. The sun hangs low on the horizon, casting long shadows through the trees and painting everything in shades of amber and gold. What begins as a simple errand transforms into a life-altering journey when she notices Luna moths, the very creatures she's dedicated her career to studying, leading her deeper into the forest. Their wings glow with an otherworldly phosphorescence she's never observed in her years of research. The golden fox from earlier appears again, this time with fur that seems to shimmer like metallic threads in the dying light. Its behavior shows unusual aggression, circling her path, barking with an almost human desperation, and even attempting to nip at her heels. Despite the fox's increasingly frantic efforts to deter her, Callie's scientific curiosity and determination to follow the Luna moths drives her forward until she reaches a clearing that seems to pulse with its own inner light. Hundreds of moths and fireflies dance through the air in impossible patterns, their movements too coordinated to be natural. At the clearing center lies a perfect circle of destroying angel mushrooms, the fairy ring Earl had warned her about, their white caps gleaming like pearls in the twilight. Curiosity overcomes caution as Callie steps into the mushroom circle, her scientist's mind already cataloging the unusual characteristics of the fungi, their perfectly uniform spacing, their synchronized subtle swaying, despite the lack of wind. The ground beneath her feet suddenly becomes insubstantial, and she falls through darkness that feels thick as velvet and cold as winter midnight. She crashes onto solid ground in what appears to be a similar forest clearing, yet fundamentally different. The trees here twist in impossible shapes, their bark gleaming like polished metal, and the air itself tastes of copper and wild magic. Here she encounters armored men riding steeds with glowing eyes and scaled hides, led by a towering figure with smoke-like wings that move with strange sentience. Prince Mendax of the Unseelie Court, his face beautiful and terrible as a solar eclipse. The encounter quickly turns violent when the prince, mistaking her for an assassin due to her strange clothing and sudden appearance, orders her execution without trial. One of his guards drives a blade of black glass through her stomach, a wound that burns with supernatural cold. As she lies bleeding out on ground carpeted with luminescent moss, she hears whispered conversations about smoke slayers and ancient prophecies. In her last moments of consciousness, Callie realizes she's dying in a strange world, far from the rational certainties of her laboratory. This brutal introduction to the Fey Realm establishes the tone for what's to come, a world of beauty and cruelty intertwined, where nothing is as it seems and every truth contains a lie. What makes this transition between worlds so effective is how it contrasts Callie's scientific mindset with the magical reality she's thrust into. Her rational understanding of the world, built on years of careful observation and empirical evidence, offers no framework for comprehending the Fey Realm, yet her scientific knowledge will become her greatest weapon for survival. The destroying angel mushrooms, named for their deadly toxicity in our world, become literal portals to death and rebirth in another reality, symbolizing how Callie must die to her old self to survive in this new existence. The parallels between her microscopic studies of moth wings and the grand patterns of Fey magic suggest that perhaps science and magic aren't as different as they appear, both seeking to understand the hidden patterns that govern reality. Prince Mendax embodies the alluring danger of the Unseelie Court. As a feared smoke slayer with wings of sentient smoke that move with their own consciousness, he's known for his cruelty and emotional detachment. He feels nothing but darkness and finds satisfaction only in causing suffering, until Callie enters his world. From the moment she arrives, Mendax is inexplicably drawn to her, keeping her as his prisoner despite multiple failed attempts to kill her. His fascination manifests as possessiveness and cruelty, yet beneath this lies a growing obsession he can't explain. He even wears her extracted wisdom tooth as a secret talisman around his neck, troubled by his inability to stop thinking about her. The political landscape Mendax navigates is treacherous. Though his mother remains queen after his father's death, she threatens to bond him to someone of her choosing if he doesn't marry soon and take the throne. She suggests he bond with Callie and kill her before the marriage ceremony, allowing him to claim the throne without sharing power. This manipulation reveals the cold calculus of Fey politics, where even family relationships are tools for power. What makes Mendax such a compelling character is the internal conflict Callie awakens in him. His reputation as a ruthless prince who enjoys inflicting pain clashes with his growing protectiveness toward her. When another Fey helps Callie at a court gathering, Mendax murders him instantly, declaring, "He was touching you." This possessiveness marks the beginning of his transformation, a villain who finds himself capable of feelings he never thought possible. The dynamic between Mendax and Callie evolves from captor and captive to something far more complex. During one intimate encounter, he reveals his vulnerability by showing her what he claims is the killing point beneath his wings, explaining he wears no armor because he accepts any challenge to end him. This moment of apparent honesty creates a false sense of trust between them, complicating Callie's feelings toward her captor. As Mendax struggles with his growing attachment to Callie, we see glimpses of his capacity for tenderness. When she's injured after facing monstrous creatures in her first trial, he gently tends to her wounds, his touch remaining careful despite his threatening words. These contradictions make him far more than a one-dimensional villain, raising questions about whether redemption is possible for someone who has known only darkness. The Fae Court demands Callie undergo three trials to prove her worth, or more accurately, to ensure her death. These trials reveal not only her resourcefulness, but also the growing connection between her and Mendax, despite his outward cruelty. In her first trial, Callie faces Nocturneyes, bat-like monsters that hunt using echolocation. Drawing on her scientific knowledge of lunamoths, which use spiral tails as acoustic camouflage against bats, she creates makeshift silk strips to confuse the creature's senses. When attacked, she stabs them in their vulnerable spot beneath their wings, killing both monsters and earning reluctant respect from the Fae Court. The second trial tests her knowledge of poisons and antidotes. In a torchlit cave filled with snakes, she must identify various poisons, aconite, white snake root, water hemlock, and their corresponding antidotes. Working methodically, she drinks each poison followed by its antidote until reaching the final cup of oleander poison with no apparent antidote remaining. In a moment of scientific brilliance, she realizes snake venom's sedative properties would counter oleander's cardiac effects and allows a snake to bite her above her breast, using the venom as the final antidote. These trials showcase Callie's unique approach to survival. Unlike the Fae, who rely on magic and physical prowess, she uses scientific knowledge and analytical thinking to overcome seemingly impossible challenges. Her victories confound the Fae Court, particularly Queen Saracen, who grows increasingly determined to see her dead. The trials also reveal Mendax's conflicted feelings. After her second trial, when she collapses from the snake venom, he catches her in his arms with unexpected concern. As he carries her away, he whispers that he cannot lose her, a vulnerability he didn't intend for her to hear. These moments of genuine emotion create a compelling contrast with his public persona of merciless cruelty. What makes these trials particularly effective is how they force both Callie and Mendax to confront their true natures. For Callie, they reveal a strength and resilience she never knew she possessed. For Mendax, they expose the cracks in his carefully constructed facade of indifference as he finds himself increasingly unwilling to see her harmed. The relationship between Callie and Mendax evolves into a complex dance of attraction and resistance, with both physical and emotional dimensions that neither can fully deny. Despite knowing he represents everything she should fear, Callie finds herself drawn to his darkness and the rare moments of tenderness he shows only to her. Their physical encounters are charged with tension, his smoke-like wings sometimes solid as iron, sometimes passing through her fingers like wisps. When she touches the sensitive bases where the smoke joins at his shoulder blades, he shivers with pleasure, revealing vulnerability beneath his imposing exterior. These intimate moments create a powerful contrast with his public persona of merciless cruelty. What makes their connection so compelling is how it challenges both characters' understanding of themselves. For Callie, her attraction to Mendax forces her to question her moral boundaries. How can she desire someone who has caused her such pain? For Mendax, these unfamiliar feelings threaten the emotional detachment that has defined his existence. When he pulls away from her just before she reaches climax during one encounter, leaving her frustrated and unsatisfied, we see his fear of losing control, not just of her, but of himself. The queen's manipulation adds another layer of complexity to their relationship. She suggests Mendax bond with Callie and kill her before the marriage ceremony, allowing him to claim the throne without sharing power. This cold political calculus reveals how even intimate relationships are viewed as tools for advancement in the Fae court. When Seelie princes attempt to take Callie back to the human realm, citing Fae law, Mendax's possessiveness explodes into violence. He decapitates one prince and demands his mother bond them immediately. Despite Callie's protests, the bonding is completed, tying them together forever. This forced bond represents both imprisonment and protection for Callie, trapping her with Mendax while simultaneously shielding her from other Fae who might claim her. The push and pull between them creates an intoxicating tension that drives the narrative forward. Each moment of connection is followed by betrayal or cruelty, yet neither can fully sever the growing bond between them. Their relationship embodies the central question of the story. Can something beautiful emerge from darkness, or are some souls too damaged for redemption? The final trial presents Callie with a seemingly simple choice between two doors, one leading to freedom, the other to a monster created specifically to hunt humans. As she stands in the arena, surrounded by excited Fae spectators, she looks to Mendax, whose eyes hold both worry and adoration. He gives her a slight nod toward the right door, appearing to help her choose correctly. When she opens the indicated door, a massive dinosaur-like beast emerges. Mendax has apparently betrayed her, sending her to face the monster. As the creature charges, she raises a stolen dagger in defense, but suddenly Mendax appears before her, wings spread wide, snarling back at the beast to protect her. In this moment of apparent sacrifice, Callie makes her own choice. She plunges her iron blade deep below his wing into what she believes is the killing spot he had foolishly shown her. As he falls to his knees, she confesses through tears that she was sent to kill him, not by humans, but by Queen Saracen herself. Despite the blade in his back, Mendax begs her not to leave, to at least stay until he is dead. "You're still the villain, Malum," she says shakily, before walking away. With his last strength, he attempts to control her mind. "Callie Peterson, return to me." She pauses, looks back, then continues walking, completely unaffected by his magic. This final confrontation reveals several shocking truths. First, that Callie Peterson is not her true name, explaining why Mendax's magic has no hold over her. Second, that she has been working for Queen Saracen all along, sent specifically to assassinate the prince. And third, that Mendax has been playing his own game. He showed her false weakness points and will survive her attack. As his shadow guards rush in, Mendax stops them from pursuing her. "No one touches my future queen but me," he warns, revealing his intention to heal, hunt her down, destroy whoever forced her to betray him, and make her his forever. This chilling promise sets the stage for the continuation of their story, leaving readers with the tantalizing question of what happens when the betrayed becomes the hunter. The narrative takes another unexpected turn when Callie awakens in a hospital bed, surrounded by the rhythmic beeping of cardiac monitors and the sharp clinical smell of antiseptic. Fluorescent lights cast harsh shadows across sterile white walls, and an IV drips steadily into her arm. A nurse in pale blue scrubs asks her to identify herself, and she responds with surprising clarity. "I'm Callie Peterson, proud environmentalist and biological technician." Her voice sounds strange to her own ears, hoarse from disuse. She explains that she had been conducting her regular field research, walking through the Blackwood Forest, examining luna moths and destroying angel mushrooms, when something occurred that she can't quite remember. A doctor with kind eyes and graying temples gently informs her that she's been unconscious for nearly 3 weeks and that her grandfather Earl had just left to get her family and friends. The doctor's careful tone suggests there's more to the story than he's sharing. This sudden shift raises profound questions about the nature of reality in the story. Was the entire Fey realm, the crystalline palace, the shape-shifting creatures, the blood oaths, and ancient magic simply a hallucination caused by poisonous mushrooms, as her family had once suggested about her childhood fairy sighting in the same forest? Or is this apparent return to the human world another layer of deception, a glamour cast by the Fey to keep her docile? The narrative then shifts dramatically to a new perspective, someone chopping wood outside a weathered cottage, watching crimson blood dripping from a suspended goose into a rusty bucket. The methodical thunk of the axe punctuates their dark thoughts. This person reflects on a litany of personal tragedies. A beloved sister, Winter's death during the last blood moon, a mother's agonizing passing after childbirth in midwinter, and a father who simply laid down one day and died from grief, his heart too heavy to continue beating. They blame the enchanted forest for their cascade of sorrows, believing it's not just alive but malevolently conscious, like the Fey who dwell within its shadows. When villagers approach with torches and grim expressions, bearing news that the local well has gone dry, the third such occurrence this season, this person realizes it's their turn to face the consequences of an ancient curse. Despite their protests of innocence, they're surrounded and herded forward by the desperate crowd. They know there will be no happy ending. Like others before them who met gruesome fates after encountering the forest's magic, including the miller's daughter found transformed into a weeping willow, and the blacksmith's son who returned speaking in riddles before disappearing entirely. This final section introduces compelling new mysteries. Who is this person with memories of a sister named Winter, and why do they seem to understand the forest's malevolent nature so intimately? How do their experiences connect to Callie's story, and are they perhaps two threads in the same tapestry of enchantment? And what is the true nature of the curse they face? Is it the forest's revenge for human encroachment, or something more ancient and terrible? These questions suggest that the boundaries between worlds remain permeable, and that Callie's journey through the Fey realm may be part of a larger pattern of interaction between humans and magical forces that stretches back generations. How does it feel weaves together themes of identity, power, and the blurred lines between worlds? Callie's scientific mindset provides her with unique tools for survival in the Fey realm, yet also blinds her to certain magical realities. Her journey forces her to question not only what she knows about the world, but who she truly is. The revelation that Callie Peterson may not be her real name opens fascinating possibilities about her true identity and purpose. Has she been an unwitting pawn in Queen Saracen's schemes all along? Or does she have her own agenda that remains hidden even from readers? These questions transform her from a sympathetic protagonist into a more complex figure whose motivations and loyalties remain ambiguous. Mendax's evolution throughout the story presents a compelling examination of how love, or perhaps obsession, can transform even the darkest heart. His initial cruelty gives way to possessiveness, then to genuine concern, and finally to a determination to claim Callie despite her betrayal. His declaration that no one will touch his future queen suggests he sees in her not just an object of desire, but a partner in power. The book's exploration of boundaries, between worlds, between captor and captive, between love and hatred, creates a rich tapestry of moral complexity. In this universe, traditional notions of good and evil give way to shades of gray, where villains can show unexpected tenderness and heroes can commit acts of betrayal. As the first book in the Infatuated Fey series, How Does It Feel? Masterfully sets the stage for continuing exploration of these themes. The unresolved questions about Callie's true identity, Mendax's hunt for her, and the political machinations of both Seelie and Unseelie courts create a foundation for the deeper dives into this world that subsequent books promise. The story ultimately asks us to consider: how does it feel to discover that everything you believed about yourself and your world might be a lie? How does it feel to find connection with someone who represents everything you should fear? And perhaps most importantly, how does it feel when the boundaries between worlds and between good and evil begin to dissolve before your eyes?